Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And as anyone who lived around here in the 1970s knows, the Bronx was burning. And it wasn't just the South Bronx. It was the Lower East Side, Harlem, Bushwick, Bed-Stuy, Brownsville. Nearly 600,000 people were displaced. More than 2,000 people were killed, and 100 firefighters died on the job. But contrary to popular belief, it was not mostly cases of arson. It resulted from fire department budget cuts following faulty computer models designed to streamline the department, coupled with well-intentioned but misguided policymaking. At least that's the assertion made in a new book by journalist Joe Flood called The Fires: How a Computer Formula, Big Ideas, and the Best of Intentions Burned Down New York City. The book also serves as a timely cautionary tale, we might add, with Mayor Bloomberg proposing to close 20 fire companies next month. Joe Flood, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. Can't tell you how many times I listen to the show, schedule my coffee breaks around it in the mornings. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm glad to hear it. It's good to have you. And it's a really interesting book because arson is usually blamed for the rash of fires in the 70s and 80s, either on the part of the tenants or on the part of the landlords, depending on who you ask. But you think the whole thing is just plain wrong?
Well, arson certainly was happening, particularly by the late 1970s. There were certainly instances of it. But it was generally preceded by a period of conventional fires, fires from space heaters, from faulty wiring, things like that. And it was usually in sort of half-burned-out buildings. You know, why burn out a building that's got rent-paying tenants when you can burn one out that doesn't?
And your stat is the arson never got above 7% of the fires.
Yes, correct. That's the official department statistics. Now, there's a good chance it could have been a little bit higher. Arson's always a difficult thing to prove. But at that point, that seems to be the best estimates around.
Was there intentional withdrawal of fire protection from the city's poorest neighborhoods in particular? Is that why the fires would have been concentrated in the same neighborhoods where there was social conflict?
You know, by and large, the decisions were well-intentioned. The RAND Corporation, the military think tank, built these models to sort of model the way that the fires broke out in the city and the way that they responded to it, the fire department responded. And because of a number of holes in the models themselves, they tended to not give enough credit to the fire department's need for a large number of companies in poor neighborhoods that tended to have fire problems. There were instances where poor communities were singled out. There was a fire department chief who was in charge of the models for a while told me that they would get the list of potential closings, and if there was one in a politically powerful neighborhood down the block from a judge's house, that kind of thing, they would skip over it and move down to a less politically powerful neighborhood.
And we're talking about a lot of devastation, and especially for those of you who did not live through this era or did not live through it here, 7 census tracts in the Bronx lost more than 97% of their buildings to fire and abandonment. And 44 tracts out of 289 in the Bronx lost more than 50%. I mean, those are incredible statistics, and statistics that make me think, you know, this could not just have happened by the normal occurrences of fire alone.
Well, as I said, I mean, it begins with conventional fires, and by the end of the period, by the end of the 1970s, there certainly was a lot of. There was at least a reasonable amount of arson fires, but again, particularly in abandoned buildings, buildings that had already partially burned out. And that accounts for, instead of having a, you know, sort of half burned out building that's still standing, one that would actually collapse in many cases because of the repeated fires in it. But again, the statistics just don't back up arson being the major cause in any of these neighborhoods.
The storylines that we hear, and I said you get different versions from different sides, either the landlords were burning down the buildings because they didn't like the new people of color who were moving in and considered them undesirable and would rather just get the insurance money and move on to something else, or the tenants were burning down the buildings because the welfare system was expanding at that time and they thought they could get out of their tenement and into something better.
Yeah,
do you think there's truth to either of those storylines?
There's some truth to both. At the time, it was, you know, thousands of dollars in welfare allotments were made to people who were the victims of fires. And you also, if you'd walk into a welfare office or city housing office, it would say in signs in English and Spanish, the only way to get to the front of the line for public housing was if you were burned out.
Really?
Yes. But that said, these were both sort of well-intentioned attempts to deal with what was already a very serious fire problem. This is an attempt by the other city social service agencies to do with, you know, thousands of essential refugees within the city that were being burned out.
So what was this computer model that led the city to do the wrong thing?
Well, Rand built a model. Rand, of course, is the sort of original military think tank, pioneered game theory and nuclear strategy and systems analysis. And what they did was build a model that predicted fire occurrence and then response time, how quickly fire engines and fire trucks could respond to any given fire. And there's a number of holes in the models. One model assumes that traffic plays no role in how quickly a fire engine can respond to a fire, which, of course, any New Yorker seems a little bit outlandish. There were other ones that assumed that...
All know that everybody just gets right out of the way when
right.
there's a fire truck pulling up behind us.
Yeah, exactly. That was which is why there's really no need for those fire lanes in the middle of 6th Avenue.
No, definitely not.
Another one assumed that companies always responded to a fire from their house, which is true in a place where there aren't many fires. But in a place like the South Bronx, where you have companies averaging 30, 40 calls a day for a decade, it was actually fairly rare that you responded from your house. So in that case, the issue with that specific hole is that in areas where there's a dense collection of fire companies, it looks like they don't really do any good to have all these companies. They're there to back one another up in reality. But if you assume that you can always respond from home, there's no reason to have that density.
Is this where CompStat comes from, the effort to employ seemingly objective, statistical, apolitical analysis to the city's problems, including emergency response?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, in talking to Rand researchers, they cite this as sort of one of the initial original attempts to do what CompStat has done.
Because CompStat came 20 years later with
right.
the police department, and it's been seen as such a big success.
Well, and the thing that's forgotten, I think, about CompStat, and it has been, there's a lot of debate about to what degree it has been a success.
Right, and recently there are revelations about how precincts may be tweaking the statistics, downgrading actual crimes to misdemeanors so they don't get recorded on the CompStat, but nevertheless.
Yeah, I think, one of the forgotten elements of CompStat is, along with this sort of centralization of data, went to sort of decentralization of decision-making power. It was no longer, under Commissioner Bratton, no longer was it one police plaza making all the decisions. If there was a precinct captain or local commander that had a new way of fighting crime in a neighborhood, they were open to new ideas as long as he could prove it, as long as he could show statistically that it was working. And I think that's a big difference. This applies to data, attempts to use data to quantify any complicated thing. It needs to be balanced with a sort of more local knowledge of what's going on in the streets, in which that's the problem that often happens, is that it's not.
Are you a CompStat fan in general with respect to the police, or is that outside your area?
Well, it's a little bit outside my area, but I've talked to too many police officers who talk about it as being part of a number of reforms and it being effective. I would generally take the advice of and the opinions of people that worked with it. There are a lot of criticisms that are made. I don't think enough credit is given to something as simple as community groups in a lot of these neighborhoods that have provided alternatives to kids in the neighborhood, things like that. But in general, there seems to have been something to it. Now that said, there's if anyone who watched the last couple seasons of The Wire knows that these numbers can be used to potentially ill effect. And actually, it's interesting you were talking to Andrew Ross Sorkin about the ratings agencies, and it's the same story in a lot of ways of using models that are often reductive and simplistic. Almost by definition, you have to be reductive with a model. The whole idea is simplifying things. And, in the case of Moody's and Fitch's and these ratings agencies who were in part gamed, in part made mistakes, and, it becomes – I think the problem with modeling these things is when it becomes no longer a tool for better, more rigorous thinking, but an excuse for not thinking. Let's not worry about those mortgage bonds or AAA rated. Or that seems strange to close a bunch of fire companies in the South Bronx, but the models say it's fine. And I think that is really the distinction between when, statistics are used well and when they're not used well.
Journalist Joe Flood, my guest, his new book, The Fires, How a Computer Formula, Big Ideas, and the Best of Intentions Burned Down New York City. It's about the fires in New York in the 70s. And as I mentioned, Mayor Bloomberg has proposed closing as many as 20 fire companies now to help fill budget shortfalls. Is the city, to your knowledge, employing similar computer models to figure out which companies to close and how to strategically cut waste?
They are. There's a company named Deccan International, which has built a software program for the city to use, for the fire department to use, to do a response time-based modeling of how quickly companies respond. They do a theoretical, close a few companies, see how that would change the theoretical response time. It's a little unclear to what degree that model is being used exclusively. The fire department sort of has a slightly different, emphasis on modeling or the experience of chiefs, depending on who they're speaking to at any given moment. But yeah, they are using a similar system right now, and it's, they haven't announced the companies themselves. It's sort of a holding pattern, waiting for the state budget to come through.
Do you think that the city learned the lessons that you're pointing out about the FDI cuts in the 70s and how they were apportioned?
Well, I would hope. You know, Mayor Bloomberg specifically referenced in an earlier press conference about budgets about a year ago the mistakes that were made in the 70s. He referred a lot to the subway system, but I think there is a recognition of the ways that budget cuts can actually be a sort of loss of revenue because services go down so much and tax revenues decrease, and hopefully there would be a sense of that, and hopefully there's a little bit of historical knowledge as well, specifically in the fire department, about the mistakes that were made.
You think this is general knowledge in the fire department, or are people going to learn a lot new when they read your book, even at the highest echelons of the FDNY?
Well, hopefully. I mean, I know that I've gotten copies of the book to the department brass. From what I've heard, people have read it and seem to like it. To what degree? I mean, anyone takes influence from me is, I think, probably pretty minimal. But, hopefully there's some, the fire department also has a fairly good historical memory within the department. It's a very tradition-oriented department. There's a lot of sons, daughters, nieces, nephews that work for, go down the family line working there. And there is some sense of that. And, yeah, to the degree that, they sort of might refresh some memories, hopefully that'll...
There is a very real budget crisis. Do you have any quick opinion in our last 30 seconds how the FDNY or other city agencies, for that matter, should figure out the best way to make cuts strategically without endangering people, to the minimum degree?
Well, I think they should be looking at some of the larger budget initiatives the city's running right now with the fire department. Billions of dollars are being spent on new communication systems, new dispatching systems, and things like that. And we're talking about saving, $30, $40 million by closing stations. It seems a little strange to put so much money into sort of executive-oriented communications programs when a much smaller percentage of that can be used to save fire companies that are on the block.
All right. The Flood Who Put Out the Fires. Joe Flood. His new book, The Fires, How a Computer Formula, Big Ideas, and the Best of Intentions Burned Down New York City. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'd just like to say quickly, Barnes & Noble tonight in Tribeca, I'm going to be doing a reading, 97 Warren Street. Anyone who would come out, be much appreciated.
97 Warren Street, Barnes & Noble in Tribeca, 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.